At this time, it is just one of my really great pleasures. I want to introduce Dr. Vincent Kutuku. He's a motivational speaker, author, president of the Caring Hearts and Helping Hands High School for Girls in Kenya. Vincent was born in Kenya and came to the United States over 30 years ago. He says he has a Wyoming accent, and because he graduated from the University of Wyoming in Laramie. And with that, it's a pleasure to work with Vincent for 10 years. Over 10 years we have been together. And so I now turn it over to you, Vincent, my brother from another mother.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike. Thank you. Yeah, of course, when I open my mouth, you are going to believe what Mike said. I do have an accent. And it's true, when I came to United States, I landed in Laramie, Wyoming with my wife in February 1986. February in Wyoming. Straight from Africa. Yeah. How did we get there? In life, you have to make one mistake. No. We loved it there and enjoyed our lives there. And I did my graduate studies there. My wife got her first degree there. And then we moved to Idaho 1992. And we have been here since then. We have been part of the community in many ways, and the community has blessed us. We have raised our four children in this community. And now three of them are all done with school, working somewhere. And our son is finishing school at Boise State. It's good also to come here. I realize that two of my friends are not here. Chuck Quinder. I told him I'm coming, so he decided to take a break. And then Beth Schoffer, she had a family vacation to go, and so she is not here. But I'm really thankful for Mike and Carol, and also for Norm and Ruthie. They have been part of the work we are doing in Kenya for a long time and supporting us in many ways. Just before even I start the message, I want to share with you something. About 7 or 8 years ago, I got an information about a young boy who had passed to go to high school, and he could not go in Kenya because he did not have $600. His mother is mentally ill, no father. Mother completely not even aware she has children. She has two sons. And as I'm speaking this morning, I shot Brother Mike an email from that boy about 3 weeks ago. He has graduated from college with a civil engineering degree, supported by Mike and Carol. And they have another kid in Kenya who is becoming a medical doctor, I think next year or so. It's just amazing what you do when you touch young people's lives. Folks, the message today, which was read, is about divining moments. And I'd like us to think a little bit about divining moments. A moment when something happens and you know how your life was before then, and how is your life is after that. Defining moments. I was not born in America. When Kennedy was shot, I was young in Africa, and I didn't know about him at all. But today, I still hear some people talk about what happened that day and where they were. Of course, our generations remembers September 11th. When September 11th, you know, that was a defining moment. You know where you were, and you know what was going on and how life has been since then. That's defining moments. Here, let's just take briefly, in the New Testament, just the one Mike read, we read about Peter and his brother Andrew going fishing. They leave their home to go to look for food. And then they see this person who just comes and tells them, "Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men." I hope you guys understand what that means. That's a divining moment. These people, that was a way of life. That is how they fed their family. It was not like today, catch and release. No, there was no catch and release. That time it was catch and eat. Yeah, I mean, this was a way of life. In fact, until I came to America, I had never seen anybody getting a fish and put it in back in the water. Now you understand why I've never gone fishing. I keep whatever I get. But the thing here is, that was their way of life. You look at the other two brothers. They were working with the sons of Zebedee. They were working with their father. And it's a defining moment because half of his workforce was taken away. Half of his workforce. You look at Nehemiah. Nehemiah is there serving the king. He has been taken, of course, from his community, and then he hears a story of what is happening in Jerusalem, how the people are in distress, how the walls are broken down, and how they are being ridiculed. And immediately, he becomes depressed. He doesn't even know what to do. A divining moment. We all have moments like that, when you know exactly how your life was, and then something happens, and you are forever changed. And in the Bible, there are a lot of examples like that. Moses saw a burning bush. Think about that. Burning bush. And of course, we talk about even today, the day of Holy Spirit, Pentecost. That was a divining moment. In fact, that was a perfect divining moment, about, especially for Peter. Why? Peter, just a few days before then, had denied Christ when a woman said, "You are one of them." But after that day of Pentecost, immediately Peter started defending Christ and telling people, "You guys, you are the ones who did this." He was not fearful anymore because of that divining moment. You see, I'd like to share with you a few divining moments of my own life. I'm the firstborn of 12 children. And grew up with challenges. I was not a good student at all. I spent 6 years in three grades. 6 years in three. Now, I don't want to, and I'm glad the young kids are not here, because they may be scared to hear that when I was in second grade, I was referred back in second grade. How does a kid in second grade flunk? I was that bad. Then in sixth grade, my father said, because we have to do exam in seventh grade to determine who goes to high school, he said, "No, you are not ready. You are going to back to sixth grade." So I went back to sixth grade. The following year, 1973, I was in seventh grade. And I did the exam, and to confirm what my father said, I'm not ready, I flunked. Now, you have to understand, flunking, that time I had a C+. And it was not good to take me to high school. C+. So, I had to repeat. But there's something that happened. When I was in sixth grade, I had met a young orphan boy in my class. When I repeated, there was a kid who had been behind me 1 year. And then after I repeated, he was a classmate. And one day I did not go home for lunch. And then I saw him, and we were the only two in school. Everybody had gone. And I asked him, "How come you are here?" And he said he has nowhere to go. He did not have parents. And I took him to my home. My father and mother basically adopted him, and they started staying with us. This guy was an academic giant, and very good. We stayed together. We ate together. We lived together. And my family, my father, and that time, and even up to now in Kenya, you don't have to have all these legal papers to adopt a kid. You see a kid suffering, feed them. They work for you. So that is exactly what happened. So this guy was there, but he was good. My father took him in, but something happened. We did the exam to go to high school together in 1973. He passed. I flunked. He was to go to a boarding school. My father never believed when you are in elementary school, you should wear long pants, long sleeves, shirts, or watches or anything like that. When you're in elementary school, you are supposed to wear shorts and a uniform. That's it. That's all my father believed. He thought those things are going to be destructive. So when this young man passed to go to high school, my father bought him shoes, which we had never had. He bought him long sleeve shirts and long pants. And this guy, I'm the one who brought him, and he is getting what I'm supposed to get. And that didn't bother me, the fact that he was buying these things for him. Why? Because we used to share clothes anyway. And all I needed to do is to make sure that my father doesn't see me when I'm wearing those clothes, which was not a problem. I learned how to do it anyway. But then, the day he was to go to high school, my father would do something that would change the rest of my academic performance for the rest of my life. My father took the suitcase that had the clothing of that young man and told me to carry it to the bus station. My father told me to carry that luggage to the bus station. And up to this day, I think still is the heaviest luggage I've ever carried. I took it. That was not the problem. As I was going home, I realized that I'm going to be in the same class with my young brother. Because I had to repeat seventh grade. And you know, when you are going this way and other people are coming this way, you meet. My young brother, 3 years younger than I, we are now going to be my classmate. And I realized that if I don't put my act together, I'm going to be carrying his luggage. I did not want to carry my young brother's luggage. I mean, how do you carry the luggage of somebody you always spank? I mean, really. And so, actually, 1974, January, I devised a simple study strategy for myself. Knowing that I'm not a good student, whenever my brother was asleep, I would study a little bit more than him. And within a year, I passed to go to high school. When I left high school, I had broken records. Gone to university, finished university, got scholarships to come to the United States, finished my master's in Wyoming, and the university paid for my PhD. Never paid a single penny to go to college. That luggage was a defining moment for me, academically. Really, a moment when you know what happened and how it changed your life again. I grew up in a family of witch doctors. I repeat, grew up in a family of witch doctors. And I'm not saying rich. There's a difference between rich and witch. And remember, these witch doctors are like the African psychologists. So two of my great aunts were witch doctors. They were sisters of my grandfather. And so that was the way of life there. My mother, Catholic, introduced God to me. But still, because we are a male-dominant culture, when my father wanted the witch doctors to come to our home, my mother did not have a say. But at least she had introduced God to me. And then 1985, March on the 9th, when I was in college, I accepted Christ, and life has never been the same again. I know that March 9th was a divining moment for me, because from that moment, my life changed completely. And I don't have time to tell you how. Every decision, everything I've made, I've seen the hand of God from that moment. Never had to go back to a witch doctor again, never to think about them as anything, because of that divining moment. You have divining moments like that every single day. We read about Good Samaritan. A man is beaten by thugs, and he is there. And there is a priest and Levite who sees that man, and they do nothing. And another man, a Samaritan who had nothing to do with this person, sees him and it does something, a divining moment. What do you do with your divining moments? What do you really do with the divining moments? In 2010, I would go to Kenya for the first time after living in America for 24 years uninterrupted. I came here in 1986, went to college, and I did not go back to Kenya until 2010. Now, some of you will understand this. Some of you are young. But remember this. That is the time AIDS and HIV was just coming into our dynamics. Before then, there was no HIV or AIDS. I used to hear what had been happening in Kenya. But it's one thing to hear and another thing to be there and to see it. When I went to Kenya in 2010, I will find something very disturbing. I told you about my young friend who was the orphan in Kenya. That was one and another one. I knew only two students who were orphans in Kenya. When I went back in 2010, in the same school, over 400 children are orphans. You can Google right now. You can Google the thing about it, and you're going to find out in Kenya, today there are 3.7 million children who are orphans, mostly because of AIDS and HIV. Almost 4 million children. Little did I know that will be a divining moment. Let's show the slides here. This is my family, my wife and I, when we came to Wyoming, and we found out something about Wyoming. It can snow anytime. And so, as very good parents, we decided that we are going to do something very simple for our daughter. And that is make sure that she's wearing snowsuit anytime. So that if it snows, she's ready. That photo was taken in July. We were just being good parents. July. This is when I was going to Kenya. Went to Kenya 2010. And I was so happy to be there because I was looking forward to train people to be speakers, to train people to be good leaders, because that's what I have done for the last 22 years. But when I went there, I was shocked because, next one, I saw these kids. And you can see these two girls there. That is Naomi on this side, the one in maroon wearing the Pentecostal color. And then the other one is Pauline. And the boy behind Pauline is Dominic, is blind. And the other guy there wearing Boise State colors is Patrick. Found out those girls, they were in, listen to this, they were in the eighth grade for the third time. And because of poverty. I spent years in school, not because of poverty, but because of not knowing what's going on. But them, we spent 3 years in the same class because of poverty. The thing is, when I asked how long they are going to be in eighth grade, I was told they are going to stay in that class until they grow tall and get married. There was no chance of ever going to high school. $600 a year with food, books, and the uniform, everything paid, and the boarding. But they couldn't. Next one. Look at this. A mother committed suicide and left 6 children without a mother because she could not pay school tuition. And this is not the headline. They are the only headlines. There are many headlines like that in Kenya. So, next one. I found this gentleman with about 13 or so mattresses in his office. And he told me he keeps those mattresses there because at night, if the girls who are in 8th grade go home, they will be married off. 8th grade, because again, it's a different culture there. Let's go next one. These are the girls. So this time I started a non-profit organization, Caring Hearts and Hands of Hope, and they would raise money and take them to different schools. Then eventually, I realized that some of them, when they go home, they could be married off. And also, the danger of them lacking sanitary pants, especially the girls. And they decided that the best way is to buy our own high school so that we can monitor them and we can provide some support. Next slide. So this school came on the market. The owner wanted 1.3 million. And I don't know. God has his own plans. I just felt we are going to get it. Until that moment, this showed up. I had never raised 1.3 millions. I never raised 200,000 a year. No, the maximum I had raised was 150. But I signed to buy a school for 1.3. And we got the money. And in 2015, we started operating that school. This is now how it looks like. You can see the dormitory. That's where the children sleep. You can see the top. And the one below is how it looks like today. 5 years ago, it was like the top. Next one. This is the current dining hall. Let me show you what we are building. Next one. This is the new dining hall. Again, thanks to the support we get from this community and people from this church. Next one. But this is the thing. The buildings are there. This is the transformation. If you look at these children before they come to our school, they don't smile. You must have hope to smile. You must have something to eat to smile. When they come to school, that's their first time to have 3 meals a day. That's their first time to feel safe. That is their first time for them to have their own textbooks. Next one. Last year was the year they did our first exam in Kenya. And you can see, out of 660,000 students, only 90,000 will go to university. 13% in the country, in the school country. But if you look at below, we had 9 candidates in our school, and 18 of them passed to go straight to university. That is an add of in Kenya. We were above the national average 3 times. Almost 3 times above the national average. We were second position out of 52 schools in our region, like when we say Southern Idaho, and out of the county, which is the same as the state, we were number 14 out of 449 schools. You are taking children who had no hope, and you put them somewhere, and then you see their talents, academic, thriving. Next one. Here they are. That was the class of last year. Not only are the 18 going to college, the other 21 have also gone for vocational training places. Supported by government. We have started vocational training centers, programs there, computers, cooking, and sewing. We are going to start a healthcare program which is going to really address a need in Kenya. Senior citizens suffer at home a lot in rural Kenya because they have nobody to care for them. Nobody who can check their blood pressure. Nobody who can check their sugar level in the blood, and nobody who can even turn them, and some of them suffer with bed sores. So we are starting a program in our school that is going to be training our young girls, and then they will have a job. Next one. I want to show you here in the closing. Those are the same children in the same position 6 years later. And as we are speaking here this morning, Pauline, the one now here in front with the white sweater, she's an electrical engineer. Naomi has the same degree as my wife, early childhood education. Dominic, the blind kid, look at the photo in the back there. I was taller than him, but when he went to high school within 1 year, he almost grew 9 inches because he had 3 meals a day. Yeah, Dominic is a blind and is a music teacher. And then Patrick is a history teacher. Within a very short time, you change somebody's life. Going to Kenya 2010, seeing these faces, that was my burning bush. That was my turning point. Mike introduced me as a motivational speaker. And that's what I'm known for. But I can tell you that 99.99%, actually I'm raising money. So when you get a telephone call from me, you know what it's going to be. No. Mike is a good friend of mine and we go and have time together and not because of money. But really, that is what I do mostly, raise money to help these children. Today we have 184 girls in school. We have 80 boys in schools, and we have 120 students in universities. And we raise the funds here, defining moments. What do you do with those moments? God brings something to you. Peter and his brother Andrew, they were just told, follow us. And now we know what happened. Nehemiah heard a story of what happened in his, what was happening in Jerusalem. And now we know what happened after he got distressed. He prayed, fasted, and mourned. And he said, God, give me favor in the eyes of this man, because he was the king's cupbearer. And we know what happened. We know what happened after Moses saw the burning bush. We know what happened after the Good Samaritan saw a man in need. What do you do with the defining moments?